Well, I'm here with Nigel Goodwin. We're meeting today in Monterey, North Carolina. He's graciously agreed to have an interview with me. And Nigel, I would like for you, first of all, to tell us something about what you've been doing, what ministry you've had over the last however many years you want to speak of it.
Love to. Bruce, thank you for inviting me. I always say, don't say to people, what have they been doing? Ask them who they are. And if we could get the verb to be or not to be, before the verb to do, because then product. And of course, when you ask people who they are, they say, well, how long have you got? Do you want chapter one, two, or three? But my life has been encouraging people to find their gift. And to bring it forth. I believe that the great artist, as I like to call him, the great physician, if you're in the medical profession, the great lawmaker, if you're in the legal profession, but the great I am, the great artist is wanting to make a banquet, not a bowl of soup. I like soup, but I'm looking forward to the banquet. And if we bring our gift to the table is richer for our presence and poorer for our absence. So helping people find their gift, and often they were told by their parents and previous generations, and much of it's cultural rather than biblical or hand-me-down interpretation of scripture that sometimes gets in the way of really what we are meant to be about. So I have worked in theatre, film and television myself. I wanted, as a child, I came from a broken home. I was brought up Marxist and humanist by my parents, the Brave New World crowd between the wars, Julian and Aldous Huxley, Bertrand Russell, Malcolm Muggeridge, Professor C.M. Joad of the Brains Trust, who actually discovered faith in his 80s, which is wonderful. But so I've always been a protester. I've always had a sense of injustice, but I had no foundation for that, no base really for that, other than my humanity cried out against people hurting each other. Even in my teens, I was marching into Trafalgar Square alongside Vanessa Redgrave in London from Aldermaston, and we were banning the bomb, the sort of outrage of the bomb, as it were. But when the square emptied, the theatre of the moment was over. Who was I? Where did I belong? Where did I fit in? So began my journey of asking the question, behind the question, behind the question, and looking for safe space, people who wouldn't just beat me up or thump me with answers, but who would actually care about me and listen to what my questions were. I'd gone to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art in London, working in theatre. My mother had become a Christian 5 years. I had only rediscovered my mother because in the war, when she divorced from my father remarried and other people brought us up. And my mother had sent my sister in her teens to a Baptist church. And my sister came back and said, it's not just for her, it's for you as well, to her mother. They went for about a year and they committed their lives to Christ. And they prayed for me for 5 years every day. I thought my mother's got the old time religion, you know. I told her to go jump in the lake. She lived in London, there were no lakes available. She prayed for me. And you know, it's the most creative thing we can do is prayer. We don't need anything automatic. We don't need any iPhones or any technology. We have direct access with the Father in the name of the Son and in the power of the Holy Spirit. So they prayed for me and subsequently invited me to a meeting. I listened, I went away, another meeting, and I began to get, as from the Trafalgar Square time to now, I was curious. I think God loves Q more than A, Bruce. Mm-hmm. I think A is so often spelled O, opinion, rather than. So if you're given permission to ask the first question, then you can ask the second question, and then you can ask the question you really wanted to ask. So I think God loves apologetics. He loves our questions. And to your question, the theatre, the arts, we weren't allowed in the evangelical world in the 1960s to be artists and Christians. And we weren't allowed because we had forgotten that the arts tumbled out of the church into the marketplace in previous centuries. And culture said was feared the arts. And that's sad, because I often say, where was the church when Hollywood was being invented? So often we're up the cul-de-sac of irrelevancy, dancing on our own graves, navel-gazing. We're not preparing our children to engage their world. The questions, understand the world you're engaging, then it won't engage you. And I think that's really, I mean, I love the art. Some of us came together, singers, actors, opera, ballet, theatre, film, music, television, broadcasting, poets, painters, all of us, we began to meet together. We prayed for 7 years, and I think that's really important, and then God gave us a work. What goes on underground with a tree makes the fruit coming from the root and the shoot, the sap, brings forth fruit. If there's no root, there'll be little fruit. And so our prayers are, I think, the subversive work we have with God to build his kingdom in us and through us, or in spite of us, he will build his kingdom. So we came together and we discovered, it took us about 10 years to discover together, that not can I not be an artist and a Christian, but dare I not be? If that is the gift that God has put in me, then how do I recognize the gift, polish the gift, sharpen the gift, and offer the gift into the public square? No shortcuts. To hard work, to most things, 90% perspiration, 10% inspiration. But and God is in for the long haul. He still so loves what he made. I think one of the, you know, Dorothy Sayers said, if you knew nothing else about God but Genesis chapter 1, you'd know that the first verb is his. He is a creator God. He doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't get it wrong. He doesn't say, oh, I like that one, we'll have 10 more. He doesn't make a repeat. He makes one of each of us, and each of us has something to bring to the table. And of course, the second verb in the Bible is take care of what he loves, the garden, the planet, the universe. So we are called to be caretakers. Caretakers in every area of the world in which we are privileged to be alive in.
So, you become a believer and then meet Schaefer, or you meet Schaefer after you've become a believer?
After, yes, I'm engaged to be married to a lady who 1 week before I'm due to marry her tells me she doesn't want to marry me. And she tells me in Hyde Park, in the centre of London, takes off the ring, puts it down and walks off stage. And, well, after a broken engagement, being a war baby, we all know a lot about rejection, evacuation, and that in the theatre, you certainly, you're only as good as last night's production, you know about rejection and things like that. And I thought, oh, not again. I am a Christian. I know that God hasn't walked out of my life. But I run away to Switzerland. In my, what am I now? I suppose I'm 30 something. I meet a friend, Dave Foster, Dave and Sue Foster, who have a work called Euro Evangelism. And they are living in Geneva. I stay with them. And one day we're sitting on the side of Mont Blanc, drinking a chocolat chaud, hot chocolate, and in walk Francis and Evie Schaefer. I don't know them. He does. He doesn't tell me who they are, but there they are, the gnomes of Switzerland in their Liederhausen, and I thought, these look an interesting people. And, you know, that is me, Bruce. I cross the floor, I'm interested in people. And I say, hello, and I'm Nigel, I'm actor, blah, blah. And very quickly, they say, why don't you come to La Brigue on the other side of the Dent du Midi, Lac Leman, up there at Waymo. And so I hastily make, I think even on that trip, after leaving the Fosters, I had no particular commitment, I went over there. And I went in and out of La Brigue from about 1967 till about 1971. And they became surrogate parents, as they were to many. I think the great struggle for someone like Frankie Schaefer, and I've talked to him about this, is that, you know, when a child has to share their home with thousands of others, it's not easy, because he's not asked, will you share it? It just escalated. People came from the kibbutz, they came from the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, a little Indian guy sitting there taking American money, as people were searching for meaning, and many of them were coming from homes where the pastor was busy with everybody else's children, but maybe neglecting his own, which is often a missionary situation, sadly. You've got a congregation, but you know, we all have a congregation of at least one ourselves. Why would God send us abroad or even across the street in mission if we don't live well in our own home? Mission begins when we get out of bed in the morning. So what I found that was so beautiful about La Brigue, the shelter, was, and you'd think it would be normal, but it isn't, was that they lived as they spoke. They knew something about humanity that was worth celebrating. And I believe that every Christian knows something about everybody else in the world that they don't necessarily know about themselves. We have a secret and to share, because we know that everybody is fearfully and wonderfully made. Francis and Edith knew that and celebrated that. They celebrated it. Meals would be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. It was never grab and go. It was never so busy doing that you couldn't be. It was about being, about discovering. And the meal was a conversation as well as something. It wasn't ostentatious, it was simple. Edith's hidden art. You know, she would have a few rocks, a candle, some flowers, edelweiss from the mountainside on the table, and you were aware, like hidden beauty, you were aware of the elusive nature of the Lord's work, of revelation. God is speaking everywhere for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. And chapel, you're sitting there in chapel at La Brigue, and the stained glass window are the Dent du Midi mountains covered in snow across the lake there. And Francis is speaking for an hour. Well, it could seem like 5 minutes. It wasn't, you weren't looking at your watches, you weren't fidgeting. The children were there, of adults who had children, or the children of the community. Edith was drawing, interpreting what Francis was saying, and she was drawing the matchstick men and girls, and she was drawing the story for for the children to understand the story. And Francis wasn't reducing it down or in any kind of way that. He was talking about epistemology and existentialism and all these things. But he was getting behind the word. He was allowing the word to become flesh and dwell. He was, what Shakespeare says, suiting the action to the word and the word to the action. It wasn't empty rhetoric at all. And his complementary, if you like, the other side of the brain, Hans Ruckmacher, meant so much, Rookie, as we called him, to us, particularly those involved in the arts, that what they both did together was they gave us permission to think. You didn't have to commit intellectual suicide to be a believer. You had permission to think.
I would say that is when I encountered Schaefer much later on in my life. I was a Christian, had been saved, and no disrespect to the wonderful people who brought me the gospel. But it was, now you're saved, you don't have any questions anymore. You know, you just, if it's just believe, this is what the Bible says, you just believe it. And so I thought, well, that must be the way it is, because they've been in this a lot longer than I have. So this must this must be the way it is, right? And then I forget, maybe the God who was there in the late 70s for me, and where he makes that statement or something to it, where he says one does not have to commit intellectual suicide to be a Christian. Mm-hmm. And it was like I had walked into the kingdom afresh, because this is what my heart had yearned for, to that permission to say it's okay to ask the question, not in an accusatory way, but in a way help me to understand.
Yes.
And so I was very much influenced by that. But I'm wondering for you, what would you say it is about Schaefer that you've spoken about? You know, he incarnates the truth by the way they live, doesn't just speak it, but as you engage Schaefer, and one who had been looking, and you've become a Christian, but you still, how do you see him as, what's attractive to you about Schaefer?
Well, he's a good listener. I think he was a deep listener. He and Edith walked on the mountains from Sunday evening till Monday evening every week. They walked and they looked. You know, we are so busy today that we can be trampling on beauty. We're not looking. That the whole of creation is groaning and travailing, awaiting us to dance on the grass, and we're kicking it to bits and putting up ugly buildings. And sometimes the non-Christian is more able to recognize beauty and wants to work among beauty than the Christian, which is sad, because we ought to be leading the way. We ought to be in the front line of, yes, we live in a desert. We walked out of a garden. I think for me, Schaefer was comfortable with who he was. He wasn't trying to prove anything in some kind of overly dogmatic way. He was deeply saddened by the culture and the way the culture was going. But he created an environment where people could stop rushing. What I call a safe space, where you could ask the question behind the question behind the question. So that was hugely important. I can remember, the best way to illustrate your question is, I remember a guy called Juan Mazas climbing up the mountain, and he was like an angry grizzly bear. He'd come from South America, he was South American, he'd studied under Jean-Paul Sartre and the Sorbonne, and he came up to the Brie and he sat in front of Dr. Schaefer, and he said, I'm going to blow my brains out in front of you if you don't show me some meaning. And Schaefer wasn't fazed by that at all. He quietly sat him down with a simple meal and the Book of Romans. And he sat up with him all night. and he just opened up where man, if you push God off stage, these are the logical conclusions of those presuppositions. And he just very, you know, and there's, I can see this guy now saying, I can see the theater of it, you know, like the Apostle Paul, you know, crying out, I want to be this, I can't, I don't want to be this, you know, and then thanks be to God through Jesus Christ, you know. We have the horizontal in the world, the he, she, he, nature, plants, animals, relationships, but we lack the vertical. And the vertical crashes and comes through the horizontal. It is Calvary. So the horizontal bar of Calvary is very relative without the vertical of, and you know, to realize that thesis, antithesis presuppose absolute rather than synthesis. And nobody, interestingly enough, while there's breath in them, plays, films, books, stories, all these things can talk about meaninglessness in brilliant and imaginative and creative ways, such as Waiting for Godot. But the curtain comes down, the audience goes back, you eat a meal, you live as though there were meaning while denying meaning. And so humans are illogical to their arguments. Why does Richard Dawkins scream and shout around the world about the non-existence of God? If God isn't there, eat, drink, and be merry, you know. But we can't get out of our skins. So Dawkins is a very good proponent for keeping God alive. People talk about it and discuss it. If he kept silent, they would, you know, they would. So I think that there are so many brushstrokes I want to attribute to Francis and to Rookmarker as a team, really. I had to go with a dictionary. I mean, I hadn't come across some of the words that they were talking about. So I sat there and I listened to the tapes. But you see, again, it wasn't just a matter of head knowledge. We were expected to work in the vineyard. We were expected to keep the garden growing, to bring forth produce, to do the recreative as well as the creative, to keep the home running, keep it clean and tidy. You know, what used to be quite normal to our grandparents had become, you know, sort of abnormal, I think, to a generation of take rather than give. And Schaefer was demonstrating. He wasn't perfect, you know, far from it. He didn't speak French very well, you know, and bonjour, and not bonjour, and you know, but that didn't trouble him. He had a very strong sense of identity and purpose and raison d'etre, and he began to give us confidence. You mentioned the book, God is There, and He is Not Silent. I believe every generation has got to discover the there that God is and the not silent. So Francis wasn't saying God is only there for the 1960s. Actually, the old joke about the 1960s is that If you remember the 1960s, you weren't there, you know. But God is there, yes. He is revealing himself in a myriad ways in every generation. But each generation cannot borrow its parents there. It's got to find the there. So it must be given space and permission to ask its questions. And there's still so little real apologetics, not just an apologetics of word, but apologetics of action as well. That was the thing, that they were living it out to the best of their ability. They were a team. Edith was a huge part of that team. in keeping the households running. And Os Guinness and I arrived together at the Brie. We've been friends ever since, and many others that this guy, Juan Mesas, I met, who found Christ, Christ found him. I used to say, and I don't think it was theologically correct, that I came to Christ. I think it's much more that faith came to me and awakened me up. I mean, the evidence of things not yet seen. And Schaeffer put forth the evidence in ways that we could understand. He built those bridges. I went to Frankie's wedding at the Brie. I arrived with my fiance, Jilly, because I was doing a lot in England. So to get away, we decided to take a trip, and that's when we went to Frankie's wedding. But I arrived with Jilly, and Francis' mother was still alive. I believe the moon landings has just taken place, and she was, poor soul, as an older lady, terribly nervous about man putting his carbon footprint on the moon. But Francis looked at us both and said, "When are you two getting married?" So he could be very direct, you know, not necessarily hugely sensitive to the moment, but we all can be like that too. And sometimes direct is good. It's not that I hadn't thought about it, but I was just trying, we were just trying to get to know each other at the time. But no, I missed them terribly. I've wept a lot. I wept when Rookie died. Rookie used to come to our home in England, to the Arts Centre. He used to come up to our, if he was giving a lecture down there, he'd come up to our bedroom if I wasn't well, sit on the end of the bed and just chat away for an hour or so. And so he and Uncle Rook are very human, very caring, very loving.
Were you there, I might assume you were, for any of the Saturday night talks when Schaeffer would simply come down and say something to the effect, "What are we going to talk about tonight?" Or he might read an article or something of that nature. If you were there, how would you describe those meetings?
Well, we were excited. I mean, it's far better than going to the movies or the theatre or the ballet or the opera. I mean, seriously, we were excited. There was a buzz, you know, and indeed that you didn't always have a sense of what we were going to talk about in advance, because, you know, one of the things I learned, and I think we all need to do, is he would listen. He had his antennae were out and they were listening. What is the what is one of the things that is current that people are talking about? I mean, it may have a long history. The idea may have a long history, but why is it current today? Why are they talking about it? Is it relevant? Why are they dismissing it? Should it be being dismissed? Should we be taught? You know, but he was a really, as I said earlier, a good listener. And yeah, there was a buzz. It was very rarely like church, sit up, shut up, and look up. It was near, the group dynamic was more conversational. So depending on, obviously, how many there were of us in the room, to how big the circle should be. He didn't like second rows particularly, nor do I. He liked people to be there and able to ask their questions. But yes, there was a sense of expectancy, a kind of pregnancy that was in the air. And that could be for 2 or 3 hours at a time. Meal tables. When we had discussions at meal tables, they could go on for 2 or 3 hours. Sometimes his graces went on at the beginning of the meal for quite a long time. And you might, in the early days, think the meal, if it was a hot meal, is going to be cold by the time we get to it. But it was the idea. You know, Bruce, I don't think many people have good ideas. And maybe it's just as well. Most of the world responds to someone's idea, but they don't come up with it. They don't think of it. They're not in a... Of course, we know that the great artist is the original thinker. And Mr. Nasty, as I call him, Screwtape, that C.S. Lewis calls him, is a very good pretender to the throne, but it's not his throne. But he's not giving up, even though he is defeated. In reality, he is still trying to deceive. But so very few people are given great ideas, have a sense of vision. And Schaefer was one of those who, he wasn't just reacting to society, he was proactive in society. I think it's really important that, because there are a lot of books around, it's important to analyze, it's very good to be analytical, but show me what next then, you know, does the curtain go up anywhere, or are we just called to say what is wrong out there, or are we called to bring forth? And there aren't too many people who are good at bringing forth. How shall we then live? What does this life look like? What are we called to? And I, you know, it seems to me there's one very strong banner over the Greek-Roman Empire and over the 21st century world. See how they love one another. That, you know, wasn't some kind of wishy-washy, lovey-dovey thing. This was the whole dynamic of agape, incarnational, revealed finally in Christ. And as C.S. Lewis says in Four Loves, we have stoke, we have friendship love, which is actually what I want to talk about myself here this week, the meaning of friendship. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't filial, and it wasn't eros, we had those three. We're the poorer, actually, in the Western world, for having one word for love, because we're not sure, you know, what people mean when they say, I love you. Whereas the Greeks were much clearer on that. But when the dynamic came, the non-Christian world were jealous of what they saw in this baby church going out into the Greek Roman Empire. Imperfect as they were, they had discovered this secret, and they were living out this secret. In action, in lifestyle, in word. Don't put a text on the back of your car if you're driving badly. You know, that is the text.
Or maybe not bother to put one there at all.
And drive badly, right. Nobody will know who you truly are, you know. If you put a text on the back of your car, in California they put shark on there, so.
If I've heard people tell me, as I've interviewed, folks who would be maybe at the Saturday night, and I wonder what you would have to say about this. And that is that Schaefer had a unique way of listening to a question and then sort of getting the gist of the question, or maybe even what was behind the question, and being able to answer it so well.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, yes, of course you've heard it before. You may have heard it 500 times from an Indian, an African, a Brit, a European. You may have heard it, but he never sounded like a rather worn-out CD, or in those days, a piece of vinyl, you know, just repeating an answer. He seemed to be listening to you. He seemed to understand the Greek rationale and the Hebrew belly. Mm-hmm. He seemed to understand a person's anatomy. He seemed to know that. And I think, of course, culturally, in the West, we have been brought up with the Greek rationale, but we're not terribly good at the viscera, the gut. And yet, it's to me, it's where the poem and the song and the music come from. They come from there. Mm-hmm. And it's not either or, it's both and more. When the head and the heart are working from the viscera for the glory of God, watch out, world. So he understood the person. He knew something about the person. He identified with the person. They weren't however impersonal they felt about themselves, he knew that they were fearfully and wonderfully made. He knew that they were truly unique. They were personal. And he celebrated them with the wrestling of questions. And he wouldn't let you off the hook. He let you go if you weren't at that moment, you were locked and you weren't prepared to go any further. But if he saw there was a crack in the door, he would step into it and he would push the question. It's very much like a person saying, "You say unto me, I say unto you." The debate, the argument. He was very good at the argument. I know that people have tried to say, well, he didn't claim to be baptized in philosophy or anything like that. He was a pastor. Mm-hmm. But he, at the same time, within the potential and beyond the potential, he stretched himself. And it was the complementary nature of him and his family and everything that particularly, I think, many people in the Western world, America, who'd left, their parents maybe ran successful churches, quote unquote, but had not had time for their own children. And it's classic, isn't it? And so, as they say, these kids have done a lot of searching, but all of their searches seem to be cul-de-sac, dead end. And here was somebody who was showing you it wasn't a dead end alley, it was the opening of the juices of our humanity in every possible area of our lives.
One, and I'm not sure precisely where I found this, but in reading something that Schaefer said to something similar to this, if not precisely this. When you have a person in front of you, do not first see a sinner, see a human being. Yes. And that has had such an impact on my own thinking, how we go about evangelism.
Yes.
To see the humanity, to identify the humanity, because we are, as Paul says,
yes,
made of all of one blood.
Yes.
And we share humanity.
Yes.
If we have other things, then we have different ones, but we all share humanity.
Exactly.
I'm wondering, you speak of the 60s. It seems in those days that there were a lot of questions, but they did actually seem to be honest questions.
Yes.
It seems today that as we look at the world, they're not so much asking questions. Would you say that's true or not?
I think yes and no, which is what Francis said to most questions. Yes and no. You know, which isn't a cop-out, because there is a yes and a no,
yes,
to most of these things. But I think that we do move through phases. Parts of the world are very curious and very hungry, physically, mentally, and spiritually hungry in their brokenness. Recognizing your own brokenness is the beginning of healing. You don't go to a doctor if you feel terrific, or he'd be out of a job. You don't go to a garage if you've got a full tank of petrol. But I do find, certainly in the arts, there are many, many questions. I find that Buddhism has become very attractive to lots of people because it's impersonal. It doesn't confront in the way that Christianity confronts our humanity. It's an absorption into, supposedly, into whatever is. It's almost a loss of identity rather than the finding of an identity. And discovering that you have a role to play in kingdom building, in the banquet, journey of the banquet. So I think the 60s was an attractive time in many ways, but we were throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So we, but sadly, very few churches were, like you said at the beginning, permitting the apologetic, permitting the question. When I became a Christian, my questions began in a whole new way. And the scriptures became alive to me, whereas it was just a piece of paper before, occasionally pretty poetry or some psalms or things like that. But I didn't think they were relevant. When literally the day after I became a Christian, they were totally relevant to where I was in the 21st century. They were coming off the page to me. And I wanted to find others who were in the debate, you know, in the argument with me, fellow travellers, and found them, of course, at Le Brie. And I love Os Guinness's phrase, learning to live with our deepest differences. So I think as you engage the world, you discover more of the wonder of the world, the wonder of difference, that no one is the same in any way, that God actually has created incredible diversity, yet he has created unity and diversity, freedom and form, as Schaeffer used to talk about. If you want to land on the moon, you better find out the instructions of the universe. You know, there is order. And we can't actually get out of bed in the morning if there's not some order on the roads or wherever. We break the rules at our own peril. So yeah, more questions maybe, although I think each generation has its energy, its questions, and it's really, again, do you create an environment, do you find an environment where people feel safe enough to ask their questions without being given flippant, cheap, or meaningless responses to those questions, but genuine, I don't want to say so much answers as enabling them to ask the next question, because the way you respond to the first one really makes sense. So therefore, I can ask the next question. And we're so, one of the very clever, deceptive things of Screwtape is to, Mr. Nasty, is to divert that and say, and keep us busy. Keep us so busy. Here in the United States, people are afraid they're missing something and they end up missing everything because they don't stay long enough with the thing and wrestle with it.
Yes.
But they want the next book, the next book, the next book, as if they're kind of pepping themselves up with some kind of injection.
Yeah, our souls are restless for the new thing.
Exactly.
So what would you say, if you can think of something, I mean, you've said that Schaeffer had a profound influence in your life. So can you maybe give me one way in which you think that Schaeffer's had that sort of lasting imprint on you?
Permission for me to be me, to enjoy who I am, which is not saying there isn't room for improvement every day. I try to encourage people, Bruce, this way. get out of bed in the morning, look in the mirror, and say, good morning, good looking. And when a voice whispers in your ear, there's room for improvement, you say, get lost, I'm not talking to you. I know there's room for improvement. You are not an original thinker. I'm looking, I'm giving the clay back to the potter each day so that the potter will work on the clay, giving me eyes to see and ears to hear, giving me new horizons, new vistas. Schaefer, Francis enabled me to do that and to know that it was okay. He created indirectly, because he didn't set out to create a community. You know, he didn't say, this is the A, B, C, D, E of what I, you know, want. He met people where they were, and that's where I can cry stars, and he took them to where they never dreamed they might go. And so I would say the lasting thing was the dignity of what it means to be fully human. Ruckmacher had a phrase which has never gone away, and I've worked it out in all sorts of ways and areas. Christ did not die to make us Christian. He died to make us human. And Jesus is the only fully human that we know. We are not going to be Jesus, but we are, as C.S. Lewis says, little Jesuses in our humanity. We are showing Christ, the light of the world. We are showing this light to the watching world. And so it's very much, what does it mean to be as God intended you to be and become? Yes. The journey of becoming, human becomings. God created, my phrase was, God created human beings, not human doings.
Yeah.
And God created human becomings. We're not stagnant, stagnant. Okay, as you said at the beginning, no more questions. it is but the beginning. Dawn is breaking, and we're moving towards an incredible horizon out there. And it's since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, Francis, Edith Labrie was a foundational, as Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, great English preacher some years ago, used to say, on Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. And we can listen to the other ground. People are, they don't know they're on sinking sand, but you can listen to the cults and the isms and the human beings that are embracing other things. But you do so from the foundations that Christ has laid. And, you know, I don't have to, as an actor, I don't have to be a murderer to play a murderer. I don't have to jump into bed with somebody to feel these or emote or behave in this. But within our humanity are aspects of us that lead to that. And the character, you know, a lot of the church feared the arts because they had this Greek idea that you put on a mask. No, the characters are major themes out there, minor themes in you. I'll give you an example. Maggie Smith of Downton Abbey. Mm-hmm. She was told a few years ago at the Guthrie Theatre, the director said, I want you to play this part next week. And she said, well, there's nothing in me that resembles this character. I couldn't possibly play that character. And he said, well, I beg to differ because I can see something. And go away and spend some time and think about it. And she went away and she's researched herself. And of course, she had suppressed a part of her own personality that she didn't like. And she came back and said, yes, I don't like this. He said, I know, but you're a good actress and you can do it. I would like you to do it. And so with the technique, she brings it to the surface for the duration of the play, but she doesn't take it into the street. She leaves it in the dressing room. Leave your characters in the dressing room. You don't have to take them out there. And I think Schaefer helped human beings to discover their calling and their gifting. Some people waking up in their 30s, 40s and 50s and realizing they could write poetry and paint paintings and make music, but they'd never been encouraged, never been fed in those areas. If that, get a proper job. Well, the proper job for each of us is what the great artist has put in us, and for us to work at, and for his glory, our good, and the good of the watching world.
So, at the end of the day, as I listen to you speak, I say, this is a man who has been touched, so to speak, by Francis Schaefer. As I hear you speak, the way you, the emphasis, where you put the accent, this matter of our humanness, the structure of reality, as Schaefer would say. Well, the first thing we let in is not some dogmatic statement of scripture, but of the way things are. And then we show how Christianity answers the questions as to the way things are.
Right.
And I've always found that very interesting. But coming to Schaefer, understanding him much later on in life, I mean, not that much later, but in the 70s, so, but ministerial, I guess, it was somewhat kind of midway for me. One last thing that I would like to just touch upon for you to maybe speak to if you think you can, and that is, it seems to me that while Schaefer certainly read other books, he seemed to be totally immersed in the scriptures. Would you say that's right?
I'm sure that's right. Of course, I don't know a lot about his own personal private discipline. You'd have to talk to Ralph Corley or Susan or the children or those who were, as it were, closer. I mean, I would say that the disciples were immersed in the scriptures, you know. They ate with, walked with, talked with the word become flesh and dwelt. So that they are, and I think that a person, you can tell if you spend any time with a person, what they're immersed in, you know, what is their Sunday lunch, what is their banquet, what do they chew on mentally and that. We can't chew on everything, and as much as we'd like to, we can't spend 24/7 in the Bodleian Library or any other in Oxford or any other library of the world, even if that's our desire. Because we are called to get out there and plow the fields and scatter with what we know. And some of what we know, in theory, if it's not tested in practice, you know, Schaefer seemed to me I was sad when, very sad that cancer got him, lymph and everything. But in fact, some of his best work probably happened at the Mayo Clinic and places like that. God allows things. He doesn't wish them or will them, but he permits his permissive will as well as his sovereign will. He allows things so that others may hear and have the opportunity to respond to what they hear. But certainly, you know, he was baptized in the scriptures,
yes,
and immersed in the scriptures. But I think Rukmarka helped him to look at art.
Yes.
As Rukmarka was baptized in the arts, as an art critic. And it was a very interesting journey they had together as very different people from very different cultures. Mm-hmm. What one thing that I think that Schaefer had, which Rukmarka certainly had, was that if you look at someone else's life, and if you look at someone else's work, the fruit of their life, it's not your opinion about that. It's how do they, the artist, the writer, the poet, the preacher, how do they see the world? Mm-hmm. What is their worldview?
Right.
And meeting people, not with your worldview, but meeting them in their worldview, mm-hmm, so that they know that you're genuinely interested in engaging them rather than selling them something.
Yes.
That you've got
a product.
A product.
Well, we have Schaefer's Bible, and so I can testify if all the notes that are made in this Bible, which on every page, in fact, it's almost like one person said a second Bible. There are so many notes,
mm-hmm,
that I have often thought that I was justified in thinking that Schaefer's insight into humanity came primarily from his understanding of the scriptures.
Yes.
And so I delighted to have your time. Nigel.
Well, thank you, Bruce.
It's been wonderful to have you share some of this with us. And we've heard others. And every time I listen, I hear similar refrains from those people who knew Schaefer.
Yeah.
But one thing that keeps coming over again and again, one thing is he listened to people.
Yeah.
And secondly was he really lived, as we say today, an incarnational life.
Yes.
What one could see, not just hear from Schaefer, but one could see. So thank you.
That's very so attractive,
much.
Isn't it?
It is.
It's hugely attractive. There are a lot of people out there with probably good ideas, but they wrap them in ugly packages. And substance and beauty, aesthetics, mm-hmm, and substance, when you see that, you want to take it off the shelf, you want to embrace it.
That's what we're made for.
Yeah.
We are made to be oriented to truth, goodness, beauty, and unity.
Yeah.
And when they see that,
oh,
right, that is something that our world today is in desperately need,
yes,
to see.
It is the aroma of,
yes,
God. And, neither Saks Fifth Avenue nor Harrods England can put it in a bottle, give it a label, and dismiss it.
No. Nigel, thank you so
thank
much
you, Bruce,
for the time.
Bless you.